So we want to welcome everybody to the Shiurim of Tafshin Ayin Gimel, right? Actually, we can say that now, you know, properly. What? Ah, beautiful. So, I knew if anybody was going to come up with something. Even though we're starting a little bit later than we usually do. We had the two Shiurim on Yom Narayim before Yontif. So, we'll try to get right into the topic this year. So, the limud, of course, is going to be the first parak, and the topics are very wide-ranging, one could say, in some cases a little bit complex, but the limud is really a very challenging one, so it's hopefully one which everybody will benefit from. So let's start from the beginning. I'm going to start from the first Mishnah, which is a little bit unorthodox, but every once in a while every once in a while, that's really the proper place to start. Not in Yevamos, let's say, and not in Gittin, but in Bav Metzria, it's actually starting at the beginning is actually a good idea. So the Mishnah says that Shaim Ochaz in Betalis. If two people hold on to a talis or grab on to a kalis, Ze Omar Nimit Tasiya. The Gemara explains what do we mean by two people holding on to a talis. Ze Omar Ani Mitzasiya, Ze Omar Ani Mitzasiya. Each one is not just holding on to the talis, because that just describes the physical reality. The physical reality in this case reflects two legal claims, right? Each one, but two mutually exclusive, at least as claims they're mutually exclusive. We'll get to the question whether they're mutually exclusive, objectively. But each one has a mutually exclusive claim that the talis is his and his alone. So Shaim Ochaz in Betalis, Zeh Omar Nimit Tasiya, Zeh Omar Nimit Tasiya, Zeh Omar Kula Shali, Zeh Omar Kula Shali. The Gemara will question why this double formulation, right? I found it, it's mine, the whole thing is mine. The Gemara discusses the language later on. So the Mishnah tells us, Yishaba, She'ein lo ba, Zei Shaba, sorry, She'ein lo ba pachos michetya, the Zei Shaba, She'ein lo ba pachos michetya, the Yachlok. Each one should take a shua that he has not less than half. Also a strange formulation, right? If already, first of all, why can't each one just swear that the whole thing belongs to him, which is his claim? Let each person take an oath that backs up his claim. That's question number one. Question number two, im kvar az kvar, if already for some reason we don't allow each person to swear more than he's going to receive, which is what the Gemara asks and the Gemara explains, right? Because that would be explicitly one of those shvuos would be a lie. Whereas if each one is nishba that he owns half, right? It's what the Gemara calls hachaluka yichola liosenas. I said a moment ago, the claims are mutually exclusive, but the reality of each one being walking away with half the object is not necessarily impossible. It's a chaluka, yichol yosemet. It's possible that dividing the talis into two will serve the cause of justice. In any case, so one question is why not be nishba bakol? That's one of the reasons that the Gemara explains. The second question is why swear I don't have less than half? Why not just swear I have half? So that also the Gemara discusses. We'll get to that a little bit later on. So that's the strange usage or formulation. But in any case, the final conclusion is the yachlok. Each one takes a shvur that he doesn't own less than half, and we split the talis between the two parts. Then the Mishnah goes on. That's the second case. What will happen if the claims are a little bit uneven? Ze omer kula shali, ze omer chetzya shali. One guy says the whole object is mine. The other one says, I admit that only half of the object is mine, right, that we picked up at the same time, or partners, as the case may be. He's only claiming half of the object. So the Gemara says, Omer kula shali, the one who says that the entire object belongs to him, Yishava she'ilu ba pachos v'shlosha chalakim. He should take a shvua that he doesn't have less than three quarters. The omer chetzis sheli, the man who says I own half, but I admit that I don't own the whole thing. Right? Yishava she'ilu ba pachos mervia. Yishva. Sorry. He should swear that he doesn't have less than a quarter. Right? And the rule is, then no tell shlosha chalakim, zeh no tell revia. One guy will take the three quarters, and the other guy will walk away with the quarter. Now, of course, this case, the second case in Mishnah, the question is there anything different, anything, mekudash, in this case? So, on the surface, this is nothing but an application of the first ruling of Yachloku. In that, if we don't look at the case, holistically, right, as an argument about how much of the talus each one claims or how much of the talus belongs to each individual, but if we reduce the legal issue, right, to the disputed portion of the talus, so basically this debate about whether or not one man saying I own the whole talus, the other man saying I own half. I only own half the talus, but I at least own half the talus. Is in essence a debate about not a talus, but a half a talus. And on the half talus, there's a debate whether or not that whole half is owned right by Reuven, or the whole half is owned by Shimon. Since the debate focuses exclusively on half of the talus, the question is Reuven the whole owner of the half talus? Is Shimon the whole owner of the half talus? So when we say Yachloku, and that each one should be Nishba, that he has not less than the half of the disputed object, so the numbers end up being three quarters and one quarter. But essentially, it's the same rule, it's the same principle. Question is it so obvious that given the fact that they are actually holding on to, as the Gemara will explain later on, they're holding on to the karkashta, they're holding on to the fringes of a talus. The Gemara says in Nafzayin Amar Aleph that if each one were holding on physically to part of the talus itself, then each one would receive ad shiyado magas. In other words, if one man is holding on to two-thirds, another man is holding on to a third, so you would split it that way. What's the case in the Mishnah? The Gemara says it's a case where each one is holding on to the fringes of the talus. Now you have to understand that if one man were holding, this will be important in a minute, if one man were exclusively holding this talus, no one else was holding on to it. And let's say he was holding, this is probably why I had the other one, right, let's say he was holding by its fringes like this. So no one would tell you that that isn't a Tfisa Gemura. Right? It doesn't have to be, it's not a get, it doesn't have to be, within the confines of its physical grasp. So the point is that Tfisa Bekarkashta, when there's no competing Tfisa, is a Tfisa Gemura. However, the Gemara says, if man is actually holding on to the body of the object, and the other one is holding on to a different part, that's what we say, Achi Adamagas. If each one is holding on to the Karkashta, that's what we speak about, Dachloko. So the point is that this particular case, is that as it happens, the physical reality is that each man is holding on to the Karkashta. But the tainos are different. So there is a bit of a chiddush. On the one hand, if the formula is the same, if we reduce the case to the disputed right component, but it's not so obvious because the physical reality here is one which one could have argued each one has an equal physical tfisa. So in a sense, the fact that one's claim is less than the other's is an important factor. The Bali Tosfos asks the question, a very famous question, which we're going to be discussing at length, and that is in the case where one man is claiming whole, the other man is claiming a half. So why don't we believe the man who claims only a half, right? Migu the Bayamar Atal. So if he was a liar, so he could have said, foolishly, in order to gain his half. The fact that he's being honest enough to admit that he only owns a half, and that the other fellow is the undisputed owner of the other half, should shore up his credibility to such an extent that we should now believe him on the half that he owns. So that's a question the Bali Tosfos asks. So that's another issue that is challenging in terms of this second application of the Mishnah. Yeah.
I found the Shavua a little troubling. On the Shavua, you can make a Shavua on objective facts.
Yeah.
Here they're making a Shavua on a conclusory. The ownership is a conclusion based on facts. So he could say I was. He can make the Shavua that I was the first to purchase it, and there was no one else around.
Right.
That's a meaningful Shavua. But to say I own a half. Well, how do you arrive at that? That's conclusion.
Well, he doesn't actually say I own a half. He says that's part of why we have that funny mitzvah. He says I don't own less than half.
Yeah, a conclusion.
Right, but at the end of the day, a shvuah is a way. We'll discuss this more. But a shvuah is a way of supporting a taina, a claim. And here, every claim has, as you correctly point out, two elements, right? One is the story, and the other is the legal significance of the story. Right? Why do we care about this story? Desmond is not a gossip, factory. So, they don't need to hear story, right? The stories translate into legalities. So when this man says, mitzasiyah, he's basically saying kula shabbat. When he says, I picked it up first, right? The facts that he's speaking about are his grasping of the talis, his being the first to grasp the talis, as the case, maybe just one second. But what's legally important about what he's saying is, in the end of the day, kula shabbat, this is mine, bailus. So when he takes a shvua, I don't know less than half, he's speaking about the bailus, and his bailus is what's important. But we'll see more about this, yeah.
What about a big building?
We'll discuss a building. A building is karka, not metalkalim. And the question of tfisa is, we'll discuss it. So what about a situation, for example, the Rambam talks about a situation of two people who are sitting, Yoshin Bitzad HaRema, it's called, I'd say. There's like a pile of tua, let's say. And neither one is holding on to it. Right. We'll discuss soon. The Gemara in Balabasra, which we have copied here, the famous Gemara in Balabasra, speaks about a boat. Hahu Arba, Zahava Minsu Ale Beitre. If you just want to look at it for a second, we'll get to the minute anyway, so we might as well see it. Okay, this is Balabasra, Lama Dalit of the Days. All the Rishonim ask from this case to our case. Hahu Arba, it was a certain boat or ship, as the case may be. Da'ava Minsu Allah Beitre. Two people were disputing the ownership of this boat. Hayomer Dibihi, Bayomer Dibihi. Each one made the claim that the boat belonged exclusively to him. So the Gemara says, also Chad Minayu LeBeidina, the Amar, Tipsua. They went to, one of them went to court and said, do me a favor, confiscate or take possession of this boat. Ah, the Mycena Sahadi Dididihi. Because I have the witnesses, and this is going to take me a little bit of time to produce them, and I don't want anything to change. I don't want the legal status of this boat to be determined until I have the opportunity to bring my witnesses. So I'm asking the court to step in and keep the status quo until that point. So the question is, Tafsina or not Tafsina? Should Bezdin intervene and grab the boat, or not, just on the say-so of one Baldin who claims that he has evidence in his pocket? So Rav Yehuda Amar Tafsina and Rav Yehuda Amar Lo Tafsina.
Is there protest on the other point?
What? Presumably. So the Gemara says, Azal v'lo ashkech sahadi. Then what happened was, the fellow who made this call for action, he was not able, in the end, to produce the witnesses that he claimed he had. So Amalahu, right? So he said to them, Apkuha, so now release the boat, right, from your custody. The Chol, the Alim, rabbi. Everybody who's strong, in other words, the fittest in this case, will survive. Right? The strong men will prevail. So the question is, mafkinan or lo mafkinan? Do we allow this kind of situation? Does the convention release the boat so that now it will be contested by means of kol da'alim rabbi or not? Rabbi Yehuda lo mafkinan, papa ma mafkinan. The Hilchasan, the halacha is lo tafsinan. Bezin shouldn't get involved in this matter to begin with, just on the say-so of one Baldavar who doesn't have witnesses that claims that he's going to produce one. The Hech of the Tafas, and if they do, then they have no right to release it into the chaos of Kol Da'alim Rabbah. My word, chaos. The Hech of the Tafas, lo mafkina. Okay. Either way, let's say you didn't have this exact situation. Let's say you had just a regular case. Zeo Mershal Abosai, the Zeo Mershal Abosai. Each one made a claim that he was the owner of the boats. In this case, he says, it's a family heirloom, right? It comes from my father, my grandfather, whatever it is. So what happens in that case? Rav Nachman, now that's not a case where Bezin got involved initially at all. Bezin, you know, is sitting home. The case comes to Bezin. Each one makes a claim about this boat in the harbor, right, that it belongs to his family. So Rav Nachman called the Alim Gavar. Then the Gemara questions in Balbasra, which we'll get to later on, what's the difference between this this case and the case of Shtei Shtaros Hayotzen B'Yomechon? What's Shtei Shtaros Hayotzen B'Yomechon? So the Gemara is talking about a case. It's really Gemara elaborates more in Masechet Ketubos that you have two. You have somebody. He has a field, and he sold his field to Reuven with a contract. So Reuven shows up, you know, with his contract in hand, about to take possession of the of this real estate. And all of a sudden, Shimon shows up with a seemingly equally valid shtar, written also by the owner, same owner, right? We all agree who the owner was, and it's signed, you know, the contract is made for the exact same day, and it's a situation where, let's say, in Kosin shows, they didn't write the hours, and they did it by day. So that's called Shnei Shtaros, two contracts, a Yotzin B'Yomecha, which come out, you know, which emerge, which surface on the very same day. Like, how could such a thing be? No one even here is asking you, have you have such a thing to be? That's not good. This doesn't speak well of science. Right? But the point is, Shtei Shtaros Hayotzin B'Yomecha. So the Gemara says, what do you do in that case? Each one has a legitimate claim, right? But there's no way to differentiate their claims, at least no objective way to differentiate their claims. So the Gemara says, there's a machlokas. One second. Amrav, the Gemara says, Maishna Mishnei Shor Yosef Nechon. Rav Amar Yachloku. Rav says you divide the field into two, because each one has a contract. Each one has a legal claim, the equal of the other, right? But no better. So it's Yachloku. Shmuel Amar Shuda Dedaini. Shuda Dedaini is a very challenging concept. We'll try to discuss it more. Shuda Dedaini mostly means somehow the Dayanim are going to decide. It's their choice. Now, is it their arbitrary choice? Is it left to the Dayanim to try to read the minds or the intentions of the original owner, right? To try to, you know, psychoanalyze him or etc. Is it based on instinct? What exactly is this decision of the Dayanim going to be based on? That's a machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos and other Rishonim with all sorts of interesting implications. In any case, the Gemara then says, maybe it matters if it's ever possible to find out what really happened here or not, etc. In any case, you asked me the question, right? What about karka? And what about a binyan? And what about a boat? So these are issues I'll discuss, and we'll be getting back to them. In any case, this is the Mishnah. This case of Ha'arva, where the Gemara says, called Alan Gabar, whoever, right, is stronger, is going to prevail, obviously is different than the Pesach of our Mishnah, which is Shnayim Oks and Betalos Yachloku. We'll discuss that in a minute. That's the question Al-Balitosis asked. Balitosis, Chachmei Sfarad, everybody asks this question. You can already see that there are different methods of dispute resolution in the halacha. That's clear from the Gemara Bava Basra, and it's going to be eminently clear as well from our Gemara here in Bava Metzia. Yeah.
In the second case, it's about holding on to
fringes. We're in the second case.
In the second case, it's Mishnah.
No, so all cases.
Okay, so the holding on to fringes, the reason you're saying is you're saying it has to be because he's speaking publicly rather at the same time.
Because what?
Is the second case if he can see and they must have both grabbed
it? Yeah, let's assume he says that. Yeah. Or he says that they both owned it and they were partners together, and so right now each one's holding on the fringe. Either way. But the point is that by the admission that only half is mine is a statement that we are partners. Meaning we picked it up at the same moment, or we acquired it together.
Fringe bet.
Very good. As the case statement. Okay. In any case, let's just finish the mission and then we'll analyze the.
Are you assuming this is active?
I'm sorry?
Are you assuming this is
active? It's a Metzia, but it doesn't have to be a case of Metzia. As the Gemara will tell us, it could also be a case of Mekachomemkar, where two people put down money to buy the same object. Let's say the Mocher doesn't remember who he sold it to. He knows he sold it to one of them. The Gemara says that that's one of the reasons he has multiple. Form your kulishli, matasia. It doesn't have to be a case of hefker and matasia. It can also be other cases. Those are mostly hekatimtsis, meaning they're just, you know, examples of kulishli, and so on. Hefker could be a great example of that because each one has equal right to acquire the entire object if indeed he was the first one to pick it up. But that would also be true if there was some, you know, dispute about some previous ownership. As long as it wasn't something that could be verified, you know, in some other way, which we'll get to in a minute as well. Okay, these are the first two cases of the Mishnah. Then the Mishnah goes on and says, if two people are riding on an animal, right? Or one is riding on the animal, the other one is leading the animal. The Gemara later on will tell us that brocade and manik can be methods of kinyan as well. Now, what's fascinating, of course, is shneim rochvim is the equivalent of shneim oksid. Echad brocade, echad manik is a little bit different, only in the sense that, you know, we're dealing with at least a different tsuras akinyan. And one could have thought, as we'll explain, that, you know, maybe in that case, we treat it differently, better or worse, I'm not sure which, but differently, in the sense that, as we're going to discuss in a moment, when two people, are laying claim in a physical way, especially, or in a legal / physical way, to an object, to what extent, you know, do we really look at each of their claims independently, or do we just say that in some respect they neutralize each other? Because, you know, the demonstrative, let's say, impact seizing an object is exceedingly diminished, you know, by sharing that, you know, demonstrative action with someone else who's, you know, contradicting your claim. So the question is, each one's topes pachatzi, or each one is topes nothing. Well, they're not taking turns, they're doing it at the same time.
No, they take turns too.
Well, I mean, there is a discussion of taking turns in some Rishonim later on. The Gemara talks about Sircha. So later on about Bava Medalis. So there is a view in the Rebbe Gash, so we're talking about one guy is holding on to the talis, and the other guy intermittently was holding on to the talis. That's the closest I know to taking turns. You can have turns in another way. One guy holds on to something, or both of them hold on to something, then one guy, prevails. Then the other guy, you know, makes a comeback, and then he's the only one holding. You can have that taking turns too, but those are complicated cases. Anyway, the point is, Shai Mokhvin is one thing, Echad Rokhav Echad Manik, something else. Zemer Kulishin, Zemer Kulishali, Zeish Vashem Vachs Vichetia, Zeish Vashem Vachs Vichetia, Nachlok. Again, we treat Echad Rokhav Echad Manik in the same way that we treat Shai Mokhvin. That's what's important. Bizman Shai Mokhvin, the Mishnah says, this is all in a case where we don't have Hodas Baldin. Neither of them is admitting that the other one's claim is the superior one. Or, and the case with our no eidim. There's no evidence one way or another. It's claim, counterclaim, and tefisa. That's the Mishnah. Okay. So this Mishnah, if we take a step back for a moment, is really dealing with a very fundamental question. And I think there are two, broadly speaking, two perspectives, or two issues, if we put it this way, that we need to address in the bigger picture here, and that's going to occupy us for a little while. One is the broader, what I would call, meta-halachic question of halachic decision-making. In other words, in the broadest sense, what we have here is a dispute. In the case of most disputes, right, in every dispute there's a claim and a counterclaim. If you're lucky enough, right, you also have evidence. And halacha has laws of evidence. Right. The best, of course, being Eidim, Eid Echad, is worth something. There are also some chazakos and umdenos and roves. The question is whether they work in DNA mominus or not.
Shara
is, well, we'll get to that soon. Shara is a judicial mechanism. I'm not talking about that yet. What I'm talking about is the dispute between the claim and counterclaim. It's mutually exclusive claim and counterclaim between the parties, between Reuven and Shimon themselves. So if you're lucky enough, you have tainas, but you also have edus, or if you don't have the edus, you have some other raya. And by means of raya, you can solve many cases. Migu is a kind of a raya. The question is whether Migu is motzi mamon or not, whether rov is motzi mamon, which chazakos, are going to work, lahaksit, prohotzi. There are all sorts of rules. The question is what happens when you have a dispute without evidence, or when you have, let's say, conflicting evidence. You can have conflicting evidence, like trei or trei. There's a debate in the Gemara about how to treat conflicting evidence, both on the level of two Eidim and the level of Eid Echad. Hopefully we'll get a chance to discuss some of those issues also. But of course, trei or trei, the Gemara has a debate, for example, whether trei or trei seiken d'oraisa, trei or trei seiken d'rabbanan. Trei or trei, meaning, and it doesn't mean necessarily, it's not even trei. The rule in Eidos is trei kanei, right? Two Eidim are as good as 100, or 1,000, or 1,000,000. So if you have two against 1,000,000, it's still what we call trei or trei. The question is, once you have a deadlock of trei or trei, so one view of the Gemara is trei or trei is sacred to Raisa, meaning you have the best evidence you could ever achieve on both sides. The Goliaths, a standoff, and there's nothing more you can do about this case. There's no way to, it's an irresolvable case by virtue of the fact that each one has the best evidence you could possibly muster, and you haven't made any headway. Or do you say trei or trei seiken d'rabbanan? Trei or trei seiken d'rabbanan means that we can move to the next level, to a lower level. We can say that the titans are at a standstill. So now let's look to lesser evidence, a chazaka, a rove, a migu, etc. So there's a question what to do when you have conflicting edus or conflicting other evidence. But again, that's a whole thing. Sometimes you don't have edus, but you can solve some cases without edus, with edachar, and some other rayos, sometimes with a shvua, right? A shvua can be used at least as incentive for people to admit things. Then you have situations where you just can't make any headway in terms of resolving the situation by means of raya. All you have is taina, right? A toin and a nitan, or two tainas that are equal, and there's nothing to do. Question is, what do you do in that situation? So, mostly, right, we can think of all sorts of ways to resolve disputes. Like every culture has to have a methodology, of how to extricate people from, a dispute. So again, the preference is evidence and a clear-cut, just resolution. But if you can't achieve that every single time, because sometimes the aedus isn't there, or the aedus is contradicted to the point that you can't make any headway. So what does a legal system do? So there are all sorts of possibilities, and it partially depends on your sense of justice or your sense of, you know, the urgent priorities of society. Again, legal, like historians and sociologists, have written about these, topics. Like societies that are very oriented, towards harmonious, future interaction, are, for example, more likely to adopt systems that resolve disputes in a manner what we would call based on shalom, which you mentioned before, pshara, a compromise, right? Nobody's completely happy, but, people are not so unhappy either. In other words, part of the dispute resolution when you can't achieve absolute justice is to at least make sure that future interactions can continue in that society, that this one dispute doesn't sour relations, such that you can't move forward, especially when you have a small society or a society where you have, where interactions between the same people or clans, right, is going to be a continuing factor. So it's not enough to solve this one problem. You have to put it in a larger context of all problems, and future interrelationships as well. On the other hand, other societies with, other kind of priorities may be more interested in the deterrence, might be more interested in knas, penalizing people. You don't want to, shaloi echote and niskar is going to be a factor. Trying to achieve like the ideal solution, even if that is a remote possibility, but it's still possible, how much value is there in that, as opposed to trying to minimize, the just persons or the just sides loss. Right? These are all different factors that you would want to weigh when you consider dispute resolution in the context of not having evidence one way or another. So what's fascinating is that when you look at this question from a halachic point of view, right? I mean, halacha doesn't have the flexibility that certain other societies have, because, for us, din and tzedek, right, isn't just a, an efficient model. It isn't just a, a nicety. It's, b'shvila Torah shenikra, reishis. So, yikav adin sahar, the idea of justice, is a very critical component. And adherence to the halacha, and shelo yechote niskar, right, is not just a strategy, and certainly not only a tactic, right, it's like a foundation of the system of yosher and tzedek, and din. Din is itself viewed in that elevated kind of mesunim b'din. And Rabbeinu Yonah's famous comment that I would like to quote. Rabbeinu Yonah says, Haskel v'yadoa osi. If you really want to understand the Rabbeinu Shalom, study Choshen Mishpat. Because even though it's the way I interpret it, even though it's the most pragmatic of law, right, it's the area of interaction which is common in all societies, but that's where you can really see what's unique about Jewish law, in the sense of tzedek and so on. So we don't have the flexibility to do whatever you want, whoever, achieves the greater good. But some of these goods themselves are internal factors that Judaism, that halacha, right, embraces, including, of course, shalom on one hand, but also emes and tzedek on the other.
Okay, so tzedek,
tzedek, tzedek, tzedek, good. Double tzedek, right? So... exactly. So the point is, you have to look at the, when you look at the array, the wide range of solutions for seemingly evidence, irresolvable seikos, so you're struck by the range and how some of these factors and motifs really come to the fore. But then you have to examine the criteria, like when do we say which day. So for example, we have a Yehi Munach Ad Sheyavo Eliyahu out there. We'll see it in just a second. Sometimes you can't know, and therefore Benson doesn't want to miscarry justice. Sometimes they play it safe, right? They say, "Hey, because another factor, in addition to the question of peace between the Bali Dvarim and society moving forward, in addition to limiting loss, in addition to trying to, you know, even if it's, you know, in the context of risk, achieve a perfect justice, right? There is also the reputation, what we call Zilusa de Bedina, right? Bezdin should not get involved in cases, you know, where their own reputation is going to be tarnished, where through no fault of their own, they're going to end up being the vehicles for miscarriage of justice. That's the concept of Zilusa de Bedina on a certain level. On the other hand, you know, Judaism doesn't believe that Bezdin shouldn't get its hands dirty at all. So Yehemunach is a kind of a siluk. But Bezdin says, listen, we are not going to be the ones to put the money in the wrong people's hands. Moreover, we'll see in a moment, Yehemunach has a component of Shelo Yechote Niska. We'll see in a moment, Yehemunach is refers to the case of Mana Shlishi, but not necessarily only Mana Shlishi. It's a case where a man, two men, were mafkid money with a third fellow. One gave $100, the other one gave $200, and then when it came time to, you know, retrieve, so each one claimed that he's the one who gave the $200. Right? So the question is, what do you do? So the Chachamim's view is Yehemunach Achiyavo Eliyahu. Right? Meaning, the view of the Chacham is, each one gets $100, because there's no dispute about the 100, it's about the second 100 that there's a debate, and about that second 100 we say, Yehemunach Achiyavo Eliyahu. We don't want to put the money in the wrong, we'd rather hold out, you know, and not get our hands dirty. Okay. The view of Rabbi Yossi, as we'll see in just a second, we'll read it inside in a second, is Rabbi Yossi's position was to take all 300. Because he was concerned, right, that that is a deterrent for the rabbi. His Vade Rabbi, somebody here is a liar, a cheater, right? He shouldn't be able to get away with it being pupils. He has no loss. He doesn't lose. He can only benefit from his claim. So to penalize him, both as a way of encouraging, right, is, you know, admission of the truth, as well as penalizing him, as well as deterrent, right, we say all three. So in the Emunah Chavaliyo, both the Rabbi Yossi version and the Chachamim, you already have certain ideas. Kol Da'alim Davar, as we just mentioned, also on the surface looks like a might makes right. That's a very strange idea of the halacha would, you know, endorse such a thing. When we get to it in more detail, we'll discuss the famous shita of the Rush. The Rush here in Bambatzia and in Tshuva and in Bavasra suggests that there is a birur element. I think it's overstated when people quote this Rush, but there's an element of birur in Kol Da'alim Davar. The Rush thinks that the real owner is going to be motivated. He's going to be more relentless. He's going to be more tenacious. And in the end, he's not going to rest until he, you know, achieves his goal. He has more of a motivation, and there's a greater, sense of justice, and all of that is going to, you know, encourage him to prevail. So the Rush thinks that there's an objective, just element called Al-Babar. Most who show them do not. Most who show them see Kol Da'alim Davar as what we call a kind of siluk, meaning, it's not that we think that this is a way to solve disputes, but the alternative, which is that Bezdin should get involved in a hit-or-miss kind of situation, is not appropriate. Either not appropriate, or just there's no mechanism for them to do so. Shuda de Daina, as I mentioned before, is a situation where Bezdin, you know, plays the role either of arbiter, of, you know, arbitrary arbiter, or raw mind reader, right? They use their instinct. That's what Machlokes in Rashi and Tosfos, whether Shuda de Daina is seemingly more arbitrary. I don't believe it's completely arbitrary. I'll discuss it when we get to it. Or it is, you know, more based on, like, you know, instinct and experience, etc. But that's a totally different concept from the concept that we
thought of. Is that suggested the basis promoting a duel or a boxing match?
No, not promoting it. The point is,
what do you mean cordon vivant? They have to really go on hitting.
It means whoever will grab the whoever will physically prevail will be able to keep the object. The question is, what do we really mean by it? Again, so the Rush sees that there's an element of other Rishonim think it's not that Bezim is promoting it. They're not selling tickets or lending their. But maybe the point behind it is exactly the opposite, meaning Bezim cannot tarnish their reputation by getting involved in the resolution of this dispute, because there's nothing for them to go to base it on. And therefore, what they say is, listen, we judicially can't do anything.
Yeah, even if they bloody themselves, Beis Din doesn't say anything.
Sorry?
Even if they bloody themselves, Beis Din doesn't say anything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no one is, Russia, Lama, Sakarayach, no one is saying you have to bloody each other. But, the Dina Kabbalah still applies. You don't have to bloody each other, but that's a different issue. You can open up another Din Torah. It's called the Lamazik. But what I'm saying is that it's not Beis Din, promoting. Again, according to the Rush, I would say there's an element, even for the Rush, I don't believe that it's Beis Din promoting and endorsing. And say, this is the right resolution. It's just that the Rush has the view that if there wasn't some objective reason to think that in most cases this would turn out right, then the perspective, I'm using the phrase, the Musa de Bedina would probably not be sufficient basis for Beis Din to ignore what's happening here. But the more general view is, Beis Din says, listen, we can't do anything here. It's not our domain. So without, being violated, you'll have to just figure some other way, to resolve it. If that includes strong-armed tactics, then what Bali Halakha sometimes call siluk. The question is about Kol Dal Gavar, I just want to get into it now because we're going to speak about more, is like, does it ever end? Right? Is it a single contest? Right? Is there a time limit? Or is it, in the context of Kol Dal Gavar, each person can one up the other one? That part of the question is it really a resolution?
Can I presume that playing a chess match could determine Kol Dal Gavar?
I don't think so. Unless they're fighting over chess pieces. I mean, if they agree to the death of tonight, that's something else. That's what we call that. Yeah.
Are we abstracting from, or do we really want to pay attention to the nature of the litigants themselves? Are we simply, one is a known Tzadik, the other one is a known Russia?
Right. Well, so Guru Mitzayish, we usually don't, when it comes to, again, there is a concept in halacha, but that's a Sanhedrin halacha called Din Meruma, where Beis Din has given a certain leeway and license, to use their intuition, not just in Shuddah D'Daimi, according to some Rishonim, but, in general. Like, if they think, there's something off in this case. But most cases, in these cases, absolutely not.
We don't care.
No. In these cases, not that we don't care, it's too... The cheska is like I've said about Aedas many times. Moshe the Aaron Sheachim him. It's a Krovim Epsulim. And, Ploni and Almoni, are believed. And if Ploni and Almoni, dispute to Moshe and whoever Moshe's partner is who's not related to him, that's trey or trey. So that notion of cheska kashrus applies per se to Bali Dinim, except if there's, again, some sort of a Din Ruma, but that's a Hilchos Sanhedrin halacha. That's not a Hilchos Sanhedrin halacha. Right, that's also Guru Mipneish. That we don't care if he's a Ashir, an Ani, a Tamil Chacham, 100%. Yeah.
Maintaining that Beis Din should not get involved in sort of a white gloves approach.
Yeah.
How come in Cheska he wasn't with Boston, but the stakes were so much higher than normally Metalfalin?
Right. What do you mean?
I mean, any ruling on a piece of karka is necessarily going to create a tremendous animosity.
In most resolutions of Metalfalin, Beis Din is rendering a decision as well. We're talking about a specific case. Zeromashalvosa. There's nothing more. There's nothing more. There's no basis to render a decision. Cheskas Abatim, we have a mechanism. You have Well, I'm going to get to that in a second. You have Mechlokos there. Right? You have one man making a claim. You have a Marakama.
Well, everyone's trying to trace their claim back to a Marakama, which probably does seem to be the case in China.
But so we'll get to that in a second. But the point is, in Karka, you have a Marakama,
yeah.
And now you have a Maksik. And the issue there is to try to figure out, you know, whether or not Mukzakus changes. You know, and there is a basis based on Mukzakus, the decisiveness of Mukzakus, Tisa, right, to change the status quo. If somebody's been there 3 years, it's based on a riot sadis, right, why didn't you, if it's really your karka, how come you were silent for so long? It's based on the Tisa of the Matzik, either being completed after 3 years or they're not being erased so that he has a shtar, meaning there's concrete factors that that you know are the basis for rendering that tzak. Now when you have in Shaimos, I'm about to get to that in Talmud as well, so just hold off on that for a second. But it's not a question of more or less being at stake. The halakha doesn't care how much money is at stake. No prutas kaneya. Right, the issue is, what are we working with, and what is the just basis of a decision? In those cases, when you have a basis to render a decision, that's perfectly fine. In a comparable case, in Talpilin, if you have tfisa in Talpilin, but you have a dispute, one man is holding on to a piece of clothing, or any metalpilin, right? Kazaka, we'll get this in a second. Kol nash etachas yad adam harehu shalom. The other guy claims he stole it from me. The other guy saying I lent it to him. It's not dvarim asuyim lahashu lahaskir, the things that are typically lent. So the rule is chazaka kol mashatak zelam reishol. That's the equivalent of saying macha gimel shanim shimon is believed, or lifnei gimel shanim uvein the marakama is believed. That's metalkalin. That's karka. There's no difference. What we're talking about here, as we'll explain in a minute, is that there are two machzikim in the Talmud, and that's all we have. We don't have a basis, right, to be decisive. In other cases, we do. I'm talking about situations. We're not talking about the Emunah Chachav. We're not talking about Shul Zedak. We're not talking about Kol Dalim Gar. We're not talking about, you know, Shesh Tor, the Yotzim Biel Mechad. Right? All these cases that we're talking about now, in all these cases, Sumchas, I'll give another one. Right? Sumchas and the Mishnah, that Kufa Medalis, just look at it for a second, because that's very going to figure prominently in our analysis. You have another situation. Hamachlit para b'chamar. What happens if the two men make an agreement, a barter agreement, an exchange? My para, right, for your chamar. Now the trick with the para of the chamar is that, you know, there's a kind of chalipin, it's called, not sudar, mind you, chalipin, meaning as soon as you exchange one, as soon as you do a kinyan on one, since you're exchanging, that triggers the transfer of the other one. But no one, you don't have to be there. Let's say it's in the barn and you know, and in the country somewhere. So machlit parav kamar b'yolda. Oh, so there's a child.
What
day? 100A. Okay, machlit parav kamar, right? B'yolda. So they made this exchange, and now there's a baby. We don't know when the baby was born. We know when the transaction took place, right? It took place Monday at 6 p.m., right? But no one was in the barn, because they did the transaction with the para, not with the chamar, with the chamar, not with the para. So no one was in the barn when mother, you know, chamar, gave birth to the baby chamar, as the case may be, right? So how are we going to know? Or you sold your female slave, right? The yolda zelmer anshelam akarti zelmer mishal akarti, right? Yachlok. So the Gemara later on explains that this is sumchas in the chachan. And the Gemara says amai yachloku. The Gemara says the letzim b'shus deman kaima. This baby is sitting in the rishus of the marakama, right? So let's assume that it still belongs to the marakama, or that it always belonged to the marakama. ולהביא לחמות ומחבר לבריה. Sure, okay, we'll get back to it. This is Momo, this is what we call. We look down the two lines in the Gemara. The Gemara says, Nukma Cheska Smara Kama, Vlev Yida Kamotim Chavala, Hala Horaya. The Gemara says, Samani Sumcha Seed Amar, Momo Namutu Besafek, Kolkin. This is the famous argument between Sumchas and the Chacham. Sumcha says, Momo Namutu Besafek, when you have, but the Gemara later on will talk to the Argemara is going to discuss it too. What we call Dror de Mamona. It's the debate what Dror de Mamona means. But let's assume for the moment the more standard Bali Tosis definition. Dror de Mamona means, where Tosis explains it, Shebelo Kanoseim Yesafek Lebezdin. Meaning, you can see where each of these claims is coming from, and the claims aren't contingent upon, right, the veracity of the individual, or even his making the claims. The claims are objective. Like, when there's an exchange, a barter at 6 p.m., right, and no one was there when the birth took place, you know, and we know it was around 6 p.m., so we could totally understand why there's a conflict here, right? Each one, he says, listen, you know, as of 6 p.m., I'm the owner. You know, this child isn't very old. And the other one says, I was the owner before 6 p.m. You know, it's very possible this is my... That's the Shem of the Shem. The Gemara discussed it. Bari, Bari, Shem of the Shem. That's called, that's Sumchas. So the point I'm trying to make is that in all these cases, we don't have Raya. We have, in some cases, we have Tainas. In some cases, we don't even have Tainas. Right? But the Halakha has a whole system. Sometimes Shudu Dadan, sometimes Yehemunas, Machloka. Sometimes called Alam Gavar. Sometimes Yachloku. Three Yachlokus, actually, we find. We'll discuss that in a second. Right? Shnesh, Shneshtos, Yotzim, Biyamachad. Yachloku, according to Rav. Momen Amutta, Besafek, according to Sumchas. Kolkin. Shnai Moksin Vitalis, Nachloko. We'll discuss those three in the relationship in a minute. All I'm trying to say is, there are two big issues that we're contending with. One is the bigger issue, what I'm calling the meta-halachic issue, which is, how does the halacha, every culture has a perspective, probably multiple complex perspectives, on dispute resolution in the context of no clear-cut evidence, you know, how much din, how much pshara, how much minimizing loss, how much maximizing deterrence, right, etc. How much do we want to protect the integrity and reputation of Beis Din, right? How much do we want to be aggressive in solving disputes, right? So what is Halakha's view on those issues? Just to highlight a little bit more, you know, again, Moshe Rabbeinu, and it's not this machlokas, but it's just a parallel. Moshe Rabbeinu is known for the midah of, you know, Yikov Adin Asahar. And Aharon HaKohen, you said Pshara before, was known as for the midah of Pshara. Shalom. Again, that's a slightly different issue. That's really in the context of Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin can do, when Sanhedrin can choose with the permission of the Bali Sarim to try to strike a compromise rather than to go for a tzak. That's in a situation where they have the potential for a decisive tzak. Right? And the alternative is to get the Bali Dvarim to agree for a more shalom-esque approach. Those are both different. Because in our case now, we don't have the potential for a decisive tzak. At least not one based on, you know, clear, you know, confidence that we know what's happening. And we're not talking about co-opting the Balei Dinim and saying, listen guys, you know, we can do this, you know, you go to the Sahar, but it would be better for you, and maybe more just as well, certainly better in terms of peace, you know, if everybody were happier. So it's not the same case. But in the bigger, you know, picture, right, there are some dispute resolutions. What I'm saying is that you know, that perceive, you know, the shalom aspect, or at least the minimizing of loss aspect, you know, as being more pivotal, and others see, you know, hachaluka yichol yosem. You know, it's a stab at it. But you know, we might get it right. There's something to that. Or, as I say, deterrence and punishment of the guilty party. Manishlishi is a great example. Rabbi Yossi has a point. Now, in came Mahifsid Haramai. What does he have to lose? Let's make him suffer. You know? On the other hand, you're going to make him suffer at the expense of a known $100 loss for the party who's innocent. We can minimize his loss, or we can maximize, you know, the rabbi's suffering. Right? So those are different perspectives. Kol Adam Dov is a great example. So the Rishonim all ask Pehachad, right? For earliest I know of, you know, explicitly is Rabbeinu Chanan, but certainly from Rabbeinu Chanan and on, everybody is dealing with this question. How come the Gemara in Bava Basra has Kol Adam Dov? And how come our Mishnah here says Shnayim Oksim B'Talis? That's Tosfos' question. I'm not ready for now. Right? Look at the second Tosfos. The Achlok. Tema. Right? The Maishna Mahida Arva. The Amar called the Olim Gavar. The Parakhaska Sabatan. This is a bit of Hananel's question. Right? It's everybody's question. At least since a bit of Hananel asked it. What are they really asking? Now, it's interesting. Sometimes the Rishonim ask the question as if they don't understand how he could say Yachloku. Didn't you say Kol Adam Gavar? And others formulate the same question. Others formulate the same question in exactly the opposite way. Why are you saying Kol Adam Gavar? Or didn't you say Yachloku? And that's a subtle point, and sometimes it could be just geographic. It could be either arbitrary. It's a discrepancy, so you have to ask the question somewhere. I mean, you can always say, how come it's like this here and like that there, in a neutral way. But, you know, when people ask questions, you know, sometimes you just have to, you know, jump in and plunge in. Sometimes it can be geographic, meaning if you're in the Achokus Suga, you might want to say, depending whether you're a critic or a supportive person, if you're in the Achokus Suga, you might say, how come there it's called Amdavar? Or how come here it's not called Alan Gava, you know, probably figure out whether people are critics or supportive by the way they ask questions. But what I'm suggesting is there also may be a subtle default bias in terms of, you know, what's a preferred dispute resolution, all things being equal, if I had my druthers, right? So again, if I may, you know, let's minimize loss as much as possible, you know, kind of a person. So I'd rather say Yachloku than Kol Adam Gavar. If I'm very concerned about the reputation of Beis Din, and they're not having any association with anything less than a sterling, you know, a proper psak, you know, Vayigba Hashem Tzavakos Bamishpat, I might say, you know what, Kol Adam Gavar is chaotic, you know, it has its chisronos. But, you know, Beis Din really shouldn't be rendering psakim, you know, in situations where they have no basis, you know, to distinguish. And Yachloku is a very tepid, you know, kind of a compromise. So even the way that the question is asked, never mind the criteria that are applied, that's of course the better issue, right, is going to be a question. And indeed, as I say, we have Gemaras that are struggling. Don't struggle with this question. I'm not up to the answer yet. And that's what the Gemara is struggling with as well. If you look here at the Gemara, we saw quickly the Gemara in Bava Basra, which has the case of Shnei Shtaros Yotzim Yom Echad and Ha'arva. The Gemara here is asking this question, you know, indirectly, but still clearly as well. Look, for example, on Beis Amud Beis, Lema Masvisa Zaloke Bananos, this is 3, 6, 9, 12, 13 lines down into the Gemara on Beis Amud Beis. I'm just going to read some quickly. We'll go over these Gemaras later, but the Gemara says, Lema Masnisin Dilo Kibben Naimas. Is our Mishnah which says, Shnayim Oksim Batalus Yachloku and the Nishba, Kalechot is Nishba, right? Is that consistent with Benanos? Who's Benanos? The I Benanos, Ha'amar, Benanos said, Ketzad Evil Devil Boy the Day Shua Shah. Benanos is the opinion that you can't let two litigants testify in Beis Din, right, in mutually exclusive manner, because Beis Din then is presiding over a Shua Shav. And it's interesting, he doesn't say Shua Sheker, right? He says Shua Shav, even though it is Sheker, but the point is more that it's Shav, meaning that we know for a fact that someone is it's not the fact that someone's lying, it's the fact that objectively we know someone's lying. It's a certain futility, and there's something offensive, there's a shove aspect, you know, to this issue. So the Gemara says, what's the Gemara really asking? The Mishnah doesn't fit in with the bananas theory. How can bezin preside over a shove? I bezin aren't taking the shove. It's not their fault. I mean, everybody should be telling the truth. They're just saying, come what it will, you know, you're supposed to take a shura. If you want to perjure yourself, go ahead. Does bezin have a responsibility to make sure that a liar doesn't perjure himself in court? Right? So the bananas says, no, but that's for sheker. If it's shove, if it's a build, if it's structure, if we know somebody's lying, as long as we can think that maybe they're not, it's one thing. That's between him and his conscience and the Rebbe Shlomo. Right? But once everybody knows that there's a lie going on in this courtroom, objectively, which makes it shove, says Bananas, presiding over shove, that's Bezin's problem. What about Mishnah? So the Gemara says, in Bananas, maybe the first of three times when the Gemara has this idea of chaluk lichol yasen. Maybe no matter what they're saying, it all comes out right, because each one is member being nishba, he doesn't have less than half. Not what he said. That's one of the reasons, right, that he has a full. Then the Gemara says, lema masnis in the locus sumchas. Maybe our mission is against sumchas. Right? The Sumcha Sa'amar didn't Sumcha say Maman Amuta Basafek called him below Shua. Sumcha said that this Chaluka in Maman Amuta Basafek, remember we had the case before, there are other cases, right? But not with Shua, you don't need a Shua. Our Mishnah says, right, each one has to be Nijba on the fact that he owns not less than the, so our Mishnah is again. So what's the Gemara really doing? The Gemara is scouring all the sources, right? Trying to find out what are the alternative dispute resolution methods of the Gemara, and are there clear rules that explain why there are so many of them, right? Or are there discrepancies? That's exactly what the Gemara is doing. Elamai, the Gemara says, Rabbanan, Halmi Amotzi Mechaber Olavaraya. Okay, we'll skip this. We're going to discuss the Shaka Vitaria later on. Now skip to Gimel Amud Aleph for a second. The Gemara says, Lema Masisa, and this is just to show you the range that we talked already about, 3, 6, 7 lines down. The last word on the seventh line down, I think it's the seventh or eighth. Lema Masisa de lo Krav Yossi. Right? Maybe our mission is against Rav Yossi. Who's Rav Yossi? He Krav Yossi. Ha'amar, Rav Yossi is the Mana Shlishi. Right? One man gave 100 as a deposit to be watched, the other gave 200. Now they're disputing which one gave which. So what did Rav Yossi say? Hold on to all 300. In Cain, my hips are around mine. Because if you don't hold on to 50, he's not going to feel the bite, so to speak. He's not going to feel the pain. What's to motivate him not to try to intimidate and to lie and to cheat? Ella, Hatoye, Munach, Hatiyah, Aliyah. Hello, my Rabbanan. What do the Rabbanan say? They say the disputed 100 is the Emunach Hatiyah, Aliyah. Even the Rabbanan are showing Yemurach Hashiyah v'liyahu Anami k'shar dami. Right? So what do you mean it's not like Rabbi Yossi? It's not like Rabbanan either. They say Yemurach Hashiyah v'liyahu. So the Gemara says Seikahi haimai he always dish from Rabbanan Hasam badai haimana d'chad minayuhu. At least with the Rabbanan Yemurach Hashiyah v'liyahu. But Hachadik in the name of the Travayuhu there's a difference. What is it again? Hachaluka, Yechola, Leos Emet. In the case of Mana Shlishi, right, one gave 100, the other one gave 200. So clearly somebody is lying here. There's what we call Badai Ramai, and there's Chaluka, Eina, Yechola, Leos Emet. The question is, what is the relationship between those factors and how much they play in general dispute resolution issues, right? Shaimoksim, there's no Badai Ramai, and there's no Chaluka. Certainly there's no Chaluka in Yichol Yosefus, but that one. Right. So maybe they're not necessarily about Aramaic, but maybe each one thinks he picked it up. That would depend on the case. Right. Let's say each one thinks he picked it up first. But they're wrong. They both picked it up together. We'll see. We're starting to talk about a case, Amir Rajkia, where they couldn't have made a mistake. I wove this garment. I built it. Right. really says he built them.
How about the case of the Gemara Kulish and the Gemara Sensi? Shall we? Possible that they could both be.
No, forget the one. Yeah, I mean, for sure. The one saying Hetzishu, that's from four. The one that says Hetzishu is basically saying, you know, if I picked up at the same time or I'm on the partner. So it's Kaluki Koli Avemez. Yeah. That could be that that's what he thinks. Ela Yabris of Yossi, Ashta Mahas of the Bavada, Ike Mana. Lamar, Ika Mana Lamar, Omra Biosi, Emunaka, Chevalio, Hokka, Ika Mimba, the Khat Minayu, who like all she came. So he comes to a few Tim Rabiosi, Hosam Bade, Rama Ika, Hokka, the Emid Ika, Rama, Emid Chabai, Bahadi, Adadi, and Gua. Right? Maybe they both picked up at the same time. Inami Hosam Kondisle Rabiosi, Rama, there at the Knas, right? You need some peace in the Knas. Kieka the Lodi, Hokka might say the Isle the Lodi. Where's the absent? So the Gemara says Tanakh, the Messiah, that Chomenka Michael Neymar, because I mentioned the Gemara says earlier, you skipped that part so far, that the case of the Mishnah is either Messiah, like Hefker, what you asked for, or it could be a case of that Chomenka, and the question is, who did he sell it to? Hello, Machmar to Kashimikar. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Bela, Bana, Bela, Yossi, Hassan Gabe, Kenvani al Pinkaso, Victoni Zen Nizhba Venota, Zen Nizhba Venota. The Gemara is a case of Kenvani al Pinkaso. Just very quickly, the following case. A guy, says, he owes money to his a worker, and he tells his banker to pay his worker, and he tells the worker, go to the banker, he'll pay. Right, so the banker claims he paid the worker. The worker claims that he never got paid by the banker. And now they both, come to claim from the, from Reuben, from this fellow. The banker says, I put out money, on your say-so. You owe me money. The worker says, I still didn't get paid because he refused to pay me. So what do you do? So Kanvani al Pinkaso, the halacha is, each one takes a shua, each one gets from the balabat. So the Gemara says, isn't that against Shai Mokhs and the Talos? Right? So the Gemara answers, that's the Gemara's question. Gemara says, Gabi Chambani up and Kosu, Tony Zen Nishra, but no problem, Zen Nishra, there's no evidence one way or another. It's claim and counterclaim. My said the law, we didn't not give him a money, be balabat, say, Munachachi Olio. In this case, the question isn't Shai Mokhs and the Talos, it's, why don't you say, hey, Munachachi Olio? Right? Why should he have to pay both people? He should only have to pay one person, but we don't know who to pay, so take the money and put it in abeyance until such time as somebody admits or Elio Anavi comes. So the Bada Ika Rabbi, there is Bada Rabbi, right? Somebody's lying, either the banker's lying or the poel is lying. So the Gemara says, Amrei Hasam, Ayna Tamad, Amrei Chanbani, Lamala Bayis, Anashe, Kusa Vidok Kavidna, Maisei Gabisol Chasachir. The Gemara says, no, that's different. Because that's the case where each one says to the Balabayas, listen, we trusted you and we have no relationship with this other fellow. So it's your problem. You trusted, him. You told me to trust him. I should be penalized because I took your word for his honesty. Even if he takes a shmur, I don't care. The shmur. Atemantia, you're the one who believes in him. The law mostly besade habla. You didn't tell me to have witnesses when I handed him over the money. You told me he was an honest man. The Sakhanami of the Balabai is an Abdi Ul Avidita Gabach. I worked for you. My Swigabi Khanbani, what relationship do I have with the banker? Alpha Gabdi Mishabali, Lom Hamanli, Hilpa Chabai Mishabi Shakma. The point I'm trying to make is this whole Gemara until Gimel Me'alef, the Gemara above Basra, Lama Dalet, and Beis, and Lama Hekmet, and a few other Gemara's and Shas, all deal with the same question. Dispute resolution when there is no evidence. What the Gemara does is it has a whole series of criteria. When do we say Himunah? When do we say Kol Dalam Dabar? When do we say Yachloku? When do we say Shudadu? Okay, good. Well, that, you're consistent because that's really what you're asking now. I'm not saying it as a criticism, I'm saying it as a compliment. But you're consistent. What you're asking now is, and I'm saying this as a compliment, is a repeat of the question that you asked before. About Cheskes Gimel Shanim. But it's a good question. So, but it, people, again, people think that we, you know, we work together. And, you know, there's a collusion going between that. So, like, they know that we, from, you know, we're not together, so they figure. So, that brings us to the next point. So, the one big issue, I just want to frame this for now, and this is what we're going to discuss next time. One big issue is just to realize that Shnayim Hulchim B'Talis, Yachloku, is part of a bigger question of dispute resolution. It's difficult, but at least one should be on the lookout. What is Halacha's unique perspective regarding some of these questions? Shalom and Din and minimizing loss, maximizing justice, deterrence, etc. Now, at the end of the day, you may conclude, you know, that either, you know, that all these are factors, and Halacha has different criteria, sometimes this, sometimes that. These are all different positive motifs. But at the end of the day, right, there are clear guidelines to do one, the other, or the next one. That's one issue. The second issue is the one that you keep bringing up, which is the one. In the case of Yachloku, there's another, just one more minute, there's another context. I never go over time, but I don't have to go. But I don't have to end early.
Right here.
Okay. So this is the second question. This is what you've been asking about. The background for Shlaim, the other background for Shlaim Olson Batalis is the background of Motzi Nachmeh Amaraya and. In Karka, as you correctly pointed out, right, we have a dispute resolution. We have a dispute, right? The method of resolution, there's no Eidim, right? Reuven says the Karka belongs to me. Shimon says, that's my Karka. And it's a family legacy. Reuven says, yeah, but I can bring Eidim that I've been there for 3 years. That doesn't prove it's my karka. I claim it's my karka, and I have evidence what happened the last 3 years. Shimon doesn't deny that he's been there the last 3 years. He just says, fine, you've been squatting for 3 years. So pay me more money for the payrolls. Right? How do we just resolve that, though? In the end of the day, we resolve it with the power of Cheskas Gimel Shanim. We believe that Cheskas Gimel Shanim overcomes Marshall. You don't have evidence. Right? You don't have to be stymied. Sometimes you can have something else. That something else is called muktokos, chazaka. That is koanti. Because we have a rule, hamotzi mechavero, olavaraya, the Gemara Bava Kama, daf Membav, has two deos, whether that's based on exeris akasu, or it's based on a svara. Right? But there's a rule, motzi mechavero, olavaraya. So even if you don't have any eidim whatsoever, or if there's a dispute in Eidim sometimes, you can always say, right, in the context of doubt, leave things where they are. The burden of proof is to initiate change. Amotzi v'chavero, ola v'araya. Right, in the case of Cheskas Gimel Shanim, we think that that's what's happening, based on the original tfisa, based on a tfisa that takes 3 years, but now is considered the equivalent of a tfisa, or based on Raya Tzadis, in the Talpalin, normally, that's where your question comes, is a good question too, Binyan, right? In the Talpalin, the rule is, Chazaka, Kol Mashapak, Shadadam, Kalei Shalom. And there's a dispute, right? There's a claim and counterclaim. Reuven says, this watch that you're wearing is mine. And Shimon says, either it never was, right, or I bought it from you, as the case may be. And the thing is, all things being equal, Chazaka, kol mashataka said Adam, Harehu, Shalom. End of story. Do I have evidence? So Eidos? That's the din, that's the power of another factor called Tfisa. The problem with Shnayim Osim Batalis is that there are two Tofsim. So the other issue, the bigger issue, biggest issue in Shnayim Osim Batalis is to frame the question in this way. When you have a single Tofase, that's a very strong and powerful and decisive factor. The question is, when you have two tofsim, what happens? And we can imagine, which I'm going to conclude, we can just off the top of our heads, right? We can, conjure, three or four possible outcomes. We could say, when two people hold on to one object, they cancel each other out. And no one has tefisa. As I said before, part of the power of tefisa isn't just the physical holding, it's the demonstrative implication of holding. Right? And that's canceled out by there being this kind of dispute. So you might say, Shaibok, the Chal is no different than a tefisa of the Chal. Two people are, this is the object. Two people are, one person sitting here, one person sitting here, no one's talking about it. One says, this is mine, I bought it. The other one says, it's mine, I bought it. There's no tefisa whatsoever. Opposite, alternative, one might say, if there are two toksim, then kolechon is tofes b'chetzi ki'ilu, on that chetzi, he's the only one who's tofes. That's what Tosis seems to say. Just look at one line in Tosis, where Tosis asks the question about kol da'alam gabar, right? The Tosis simamasa b'yachloku, right? Tema. Ma'ishna ma'yarva, da'amar kol da'alam gabar, repair chetzis abachim. Tosis says, Yeshua, the ochazin shiny. There's no oxen. There aren't two toksim in kol da'alam gabar, in Arva, in both cases. They're both sitting on the docks. Right? On land. But oxen shiny, but not just oxen shiny. The choshuv, ke'ilu, kol echad yeshla ba'bavadei achetzi. Danan sadi, demai tafas haigdei. That line comes from the Gemara, which we'll discuss. That's the view of Bali Tosfos, not everybody agrees. That's the second possibility. Not no one is tofes, which we'll show also. But both are tofes, each one is tofes b'chetzi. Ad kedei kach, that it's really as if there are two different objects. Maybe even that, or maybe not. We'll see. Or, maybe, it's a little more complicated than that. Maybe Shem Yachad Tosfim. Right? But that's different than saying Kol Echad Tosfes B'Chetzi. Or, maybe Kol Echad Tosfes B'Kol, except you can't split the pie. You know, or you have to split the pie. If Kol Echad Yeshlo HaKol, but there's one in one kol, well, I don't know if it's Shutfus exactly. The third one is more like Shutfus in a way. Baby Bain Shneim, there's a call. But a certain models of Shutfus. Kol Echad Yeshlo HaKol. That's also true. That's the question. When we say our two Tosim, have we turned our back on Mosim Bechavero Olavaraya slash Tisa? Are we completely embracing Tisa but making allowance for the fact that our two toksim, or are we qualitatively allowing for a different level of that is going to determine how we understand the toksim. So that's what we're going to discuss next week.